Now, over the past few months, when I've been out and about, I've noticed a younger homeless population, but not just downtown, by the malls, by Target, folks who are standing by the side of the road, you know, as cars go by. Is this a new trend here for Grand Rapids?
I don't know that I would say it's a new trend, but it's certainly becoming more visible as we're driving around town.
Yeah, very much so.
And we do know that youth homelessness and family homelessness has risen in Michigan, and it's becoming really difficult. Especially with kids and families and the teenagers that you're seeing, many times.
Yeah, some of them look pretty young.
Yeah, they're very young. And it's hidden because, you know, you can talk about homelessness in many different ways, and there's all these technical definitions of it. But, you know, homelessness doesn't just mean living under the bridge. We have hundreds of families who are doubled up, and they're bouncing night to night from friend's place to friend's place. And most of the time, those families are split up. Many times, somebody is willing to take maybe the mom and the younger children in, not the teenagers, so they end up on the street, not the men, so they end up on the street.
Okay.
It splits families up. One of the things our shelter does is keep the family unit together. So the dads are allowed to stay there. Boys over the age of 10, 12, different communities, it's different thresholds. But they're all residing together. Because when you're in a crisis like homelessness, you need your family around you. And that's where you draw your strength from. And so one of the biggest stressful components for these families, and especially the youth, is that on a day-to-day basis, they're not knowing where they're going to sleep, where they're going to get their meal, if they're going to be able to stay at that friend's house another day or not. Many times they're in hiding at the friend's house.
Right.
You know, the parents don't even know that they're being snuck in at night and sleeping there. So you are seeing many, many more youth and families and young people on the streets.
And I would notice that I spend a lot of time in Portland, Oregon, and I think that they've got something where a lot of the younger people, by law or whatever, they can stay on the streets if they want to. But some of it was reminiscent to what I would see there, where you would see, you know, a guy and his girlfriend, you know, with a dog. I think I saw them downtown, and it was just kind of reminiscent to what I was seeing in Portland, Oregon. So I wasn't sure if that was kind of a trend that was going on here.
And we have, again, great programs. The Arbor Circle, the Bridge program is wonderful for teens, and lots of programs to service youth who are homeless. Sometimes they face different issues causing their homelessness than our parents do. In our program or the Men and Stewart's program. But, you know, when you come down to it at the end of the day, we've had a crisis in Michigan. And, you know, it's significant. The numbers are big. And anything that we can do to try to address it, especially when somebody young is involved, to eliminate that stress is really important, because those are effects that sometimes become permanent, especially for our youngest kids up to the age of three, that are irreversible down the road. So when we look at healthcare, we look at education, we look at these other things, it's really difficult to move the needle on any of those if we have permanent changes happening before the age of three, for example, in a child because of experiencing homelessness.
Now, Stuart, Guiding Light works exclusively with men. Why just men?
Well, I don't know. I am told that by former board members that they settled on men because it is harder to raise money. Around men, you know, I don't know where truth is around that. And I will say that Guiding Light has a history of struggling financially. So it there was a time we had Women's and Children's on Wealthy. Where community rehabilitators used to be. So, but so I don't know.
Yeah, I was just curious.
Can I say something?
Yeah. As a single male adult, I know that the resources that are available, like, I don't like to name organizations, and I'm not going to. We aren't offered as much. It's more of a struggle. This is once again, it's a godsend. You know, it is a structured type of living, but it's a good structure.
You
know, you can't come in there if you've drank mm-hmm. or any of the other drugs.
Right, right.
And that's a plus in my eyes.
Sure. What's the average stay at each of the organizations?
Well, Paul, this gets really interesting. That mm-hmm. I reference, Cheryl and I participate in a homeless management information system known as HMIS. And from a male perspective, both shelters, average length of stay is 23 days.
Mm-hmm.
25% of the men are there one night.
Okay.
I make, some people in town call us the old YMCA.
Okay.
You drove in, got, a room in a shared bathroom for $25.
Right.
Those men that are with us over 30 days are there on average 87 days.
Okay.
So, as David referenced, we have fairly high structure in our situation. In other places, the structure is not as firm. But when you go across the state...
Mm-hmm.
Our numbers replicate every other shelter.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's 23 days, fairly short day, short time, 25% there one night, and they're gone.
Okay.
For us, it's an interesting statistic to talk about because as we've been tracking our stats, Family Promise has been here, used to be called Interfaith Hospitality Network since 1997. If we look historically, our numbers have remained almost the same for the 15 years we've been here. Our average length of stay is 26 days. It's usually somewhere between 24 and 28 days each year.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've seen is as our efforts to streamline things, and to rapidly rehouse people and engage people and get them housed have become more efficient, the challenges have become greater. So job mm-hmm. loss is more significant. People used to become employed faster when they would come into shelter and start that income source streaming.
Mm-hmm.
We also have had many services cut mm-hmm. that make it more difficult. So cash assistance, the amount of cash assistance, the assistance for daycare or transportation to the daycare or to the jobs, lots of different things that our families used to rely on are gone now. And so it's making it more and more difficult. We had, some stimulus money through the government that came in 2010, a little mm-hmm. bit in 2011. Those pots of money are gone.
Mm.
So, when it comes down to it, it's no different than your family. You have to have some sort of, stream of income and revenue to manage the expenses it's going to take for you to move out and live someplace.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to be able to, we didn't have a nice efficient system, but the resources were there to get a job more quickly.
Right.
And now that's changed. So we've been at that mid-20-day mark for almost 15 years.
Okay.
And, let's not forget that average hourly wage
right.
is not going up.
Right,
it's
right.
gone
yeah.
down. So it is really, expenses have gone up.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. They're not keeping up.
The gap's getting bigger.
Yeah, the gap.
The gap's bigger, and the real jobs are third shift, so yeah. now where do you sleep?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's a problem for you.
Yeah, problem for you.
Anyways, how's it gotten easier?
So the folks who come to your doors at your organizations, what are some of the other things you guys are doing to help them get back on track?
Well, for our families, if they're not receiving shelter services from us, they're still people that come in and engage who are doubled up and living other places. So we're able to help them with basic needs, so shampoo mm-hmm. and some of the things that you might think of you use every day, clothing, food, mm-hmm. access to computers, case management, volunteers to help. We do a financial literacy program.
Okay.
We also offer resume services. We help with job search, apartment searching, transportation, connection to resources and advocacy through some of our systems in town to mm-hmm. connect them for needs for healthcare for their kids, mental health services, different connection to those resources as they navigate. Sometimes it's just connecting to things like mm-hmm. The services through DHS and cash assistance, which they have not participated in before, but mm-hmm. it might be eligible for. Certainly our central intake for our homelessness system and any rent subsidy money or things that might be available through that.
Mm-hmm.
And then ongoing, we provide mentoring support if they choose to engage in that.
Right.
We have a housing program that we do engage with some clients in. And furniture support, household goods mm-hmm. as they move into their new home, those types of things, try to get them
okay.
on their feet.
Okay. Stuart?
I don't think there's anything left. And we same as Cheryl, what we try to say to ourselves is let's peel the onion back and let's see what the underlying causes are. In our case, we offer third shift sleeping accommodations, and that's a big deal because that's where the jobs are today.
Right.
And, it's not ideal, but at least it's something. So, I think Cheryl went through the list of those things that if you're really serious about putting people back up on their feet and make them sustainable, I mean, you can bring them in, you can do 26 days, you can kick them out and never think about it again. Mm-hmm. But if you're really serious about sustainability, you're going to do those things. And David's seen this happen with Trevor. Trevor gets a job. Mm-hmm. Job's down at 68th Street or 64th Street, someplace like that. He has a vehicle. Mm-hmm. It's a third shift job, so he can drive back and forth. But guess what? I got no gas.
Right.
Mm. Right?
Right.
I got
right.
no gas.
Yeah. Right.
And I don't get paid for 2 weeks.
Mm. Right.
So, he comes back to Mission. We pull out, $20 or $40, whatever the case may be, hoping we'll get it paid back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which doesn't always happen, but it's really the investment you need to make to get them up and
right,
going.
Right, okay. right.
And the only other thing we do that Cheryl didn't mention, because it's one thing I may be ahead on, we do require a savings account. So
okay.
So save your money, plan your exit strategy. Mm-hmm. Where are you going? So we really want men to walk out with $1,000, $1,500, whatever the
case. To think about what's beyond that.
Right. And Paul, you're a guy, and cash in our pocket can be very dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Frankly, it can be very dangerous. So we've acknowledged that.
Sure.
And said, okay, let's save for that next thing.
Right.
And a lot of the guys have personal responsibilities, and they want their driver's license back. So, you got to help with that. That's not an easy process.
Yeah. Right,
it's
right.
It's difficult.
Amy works on the south side of town, and I'm assuming you drive. And,
yes.
If she had lost, you didn't have a license.
I have it now.
Now you have it back.
I get the job.
To get the job, you had to get your license back.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that's not always an easy process.
Right.
With the driver responsibility fees.
Yeah, driver responsibility fees. Or,
yes.
So it goes on and on. So you got to peel it back and say, what's the problem? Mm-hmm. And the agency's got to find a way to, if you're, like Cheryl is, serious about it, you got to make the investment.
Right.
And,